The Avalokiteshvara song has been my way of practicing the Lotus Sutra after my retreat with the Laughing River Sangha in Pittsburgh. So we are continuing on with our study of the Lotus Sutra, that wonderful flower. And I don't know if I have mentioned to you, but in Vietnamese, we call that sutra the flower of the Dharma. So that's the short called or the short title of that sutra, and the longer title is the wonderful flower. Or the flower of the wonderful Dharma. And so this is the third talk that we are having on our course of study for this year. And I am still, not that I'm still, but the images or the parables that we have been studying in the 2 previous months are still with me in my meditation, in my dream, in my walking, in my. And the first one I would like to remind us of, for the benefit maybe of friends who have not been with us from the beginning, is the parable of the burning house. And it is so interesting. So the burning house is about that is about the image of a father outside of a house, looking at the house and seeing that it is that fire has caught in, and knowing that his children are in the house, and if they don't get out of the house, will be burnt. And they're trying to find ways to call his sons out of the house. And by calling them and telling them that the house is in fire, get out, he could not get the attention of his children, and he had to think of ways to do it. And we call that a skillful mean. So the skillful mean that the father has found to save his children was to promise them a beautiful gift if they are outside of the house. And when the children heard about the beautiful gift that were waiting for them, they were rushing out of the house and was saved from the danger. The second parable that we have been that I have been practicing with is the poison. And it's again a father who is a chemist, a pharmacist, leaving his house and with all the drugs in his lab, and the kids get into the lab and took took the wrong, well, by mistake, took a poison and got very sick. So when the father came home, he found that many of his children were some were lying on the floor. Other was maybe a little bit less sick, but already showing sign, and other not touched yet. And being the good chemist pharmacist that he is, he fabricated, he made up an antidote and gave it to the children. So the children who could take it was very quickly on their feet again. Some others did not want to take it because they didn't trust it somehow. And again, the father had to use another skillful means to get them to believe him and to take the drugs. And the skillful means that the father took at that time was to leave the house and to send a false news that he was dead and could not and so the children hearing the sound, the news that their father is not with them anymore, thought of his words and teachings before he left, and remembered that he has advised them to take the medicine, and they took the medicine and was saved. There are some lessons that I there were many lessons that has popped up for me from those two stories, and I don't know if you have had the chance or if you have kept those images and those parables in your practice, but that's the wonderful thing that I love in this year study is to study those simple stories and try to see how they fit or how they apply or how I'm living my life and how my life looks like the stories from those parables. And this month with the we have been proposed the image or the parable of the Dharma Rain. And the Dharma Rain is that big cloud overshading, covering up everything and raining down and touching all plants. And from the bigger trees to the smallest plant, every could be touched and fed with the Dharma Rain falling. This weekend, last weekend, we just had a retreat in Montreal, and it's about the theme was the Dharma Rain, and we expanded the whole weekend exposing ourselves to the rain, and we were very fortunate to have many Dharma teachers in the retreat, and we allowed the rain to be falling from all of the Dharma teachers present. And I just asked the participant to let themselves or to open themselves to the rain that was falling throughout the weekend. Dharma Rain was raining during the retreat in Montreal, but it is also raining today, as it was raining yesterday, as it will be raining again tomorrow, as it is raining now in Laughing River Sangha, as it is in Plum Blossom Sangha. And it is not only happening when we are together in this wonderful electronic sangha that we form, but it is all the time, everywhere in our daily life. And the question that I have asked the participants of our retreat to consider is, how can we allow the Dharma Rain to touch and to nourish us? How have we been shielding ourselves from the touch of that wonderful, transforming, refreshing, nourishing Dharma Rain? How can we just fold up our umbrella and put it aside so that we can get wet? How is it that we have been covering up the soil of our alaya with a thick layer of elastomer membrane and prevent that dharmarain from soaking into our consciousness and touching the wonderful seed of compassion that we have, we all have inside of us. So how is it that we have been preventing ourselves and shielding ourselves from the dharmarain? What has been our occupation? Coming back to the burning house, how is it that we have been distracting ourselves so much that we couldn't hear the voice of the Buddha calling us home all the time? Or how is it that when our father prayed to us with the antidote that can save us from our illness, that we refuse and we have to wait until we hear that our father is dead to take it? And so all of those wonderful stories all tie together, and I would invite you to look at them and maybe just to smile at them and to play with them or to let them entertain you. The question that I ask also the participants of the retreat to ask themselves, but once they have folded up the umbrella, once they have taken that protective shield from preventing their consciousness to be touched by the dharmarain, and that they look at the process, or that they look at their life, and that they look at themselves, and to see what are the fire that are burning. And again, it's the image of the burning house. What are you, fire? What is burning you right now? And how can that dharmarain extinguish that burning fire? Or what are the seeds that have been dormant there, that have been sleeping, that the dharmarain can touch and nourish inside of us? So those are the three parable and the three images that I have studied and learned and keep in my heart to continue with this wonderful journey studying the Lotus Sutra. I will invite a bell. The theme of today's talk was, is, still is, merit. And I thank you, Brother Tony, for coming up with that beautiful title for this month talk. I have contemplated it. I have slept with it. And we have had some sharing, some discussion in our Sangha about the theme. And my, how do I say, beautiful, loyal, very dear sister Lily has mentioned to me to be very careful when I am speaking about the concept of merit, as in the Judeo-Christian tradition, because merit has a very deep and profound meaning for me. For me, being the how do I say this now? Being the born Asian, old-fashioned, demo day ancient practitioner that I am. And for me, when I have invited Laughing River Sangha to share with us the song Avalokiteshvara. So in the Avalokiteshvara is the Bodhisattva that we venerate and that we and I remember that in my family, and we all are practicing to follow the path of Shakyamuni Buddha. My mother was venerating, and I don't know which word to use, Bodhisattva Avalokita, and so is many Asian, many people in our in our homeland in Vietnam. And the reason why they are calling Avalokiteshvara and practicing the path of Bodhisattva Avalokita is because of the power that Bodhisattva has, the capacity to be able to listen to all suffering and to be present to lift anybody who calls her name out of suffering. And because there was so much suffering in our country, that's the Bodhisattva, that's the quality, that's the merit that they were trying to get, is to call on a force, to call on a capacity, to call on a Bodhisattva power to lift them out of their misery and suffering. When they were, when our people were on their boats crossing the ocean, escaping the sea of fire in Vietnam, many of the boats had a monk with them. They carried the monk with them in the boat to get the protection and the protection of Bodhisattva Avalokita. And the whole boat would be chanting the name of Avalokiteshvara all the time. And it gave them the confidence and the courage to be able to do the journey that they were doing. And so studying the Lotus Sutra is a coming back to my roots, a coming back to my soul, where in Vietnam, all temples are offering a recitation of the Lotus Sutra, and not only the universal door or the universal gate that we find in the Plum Village chanting book, but the whole sutra, the 28 chapters. And they would go from chapter 1 until the end of chapter 28 and come back. And people very diligently attend to those chanting, believing in the merit of the merit that can come from reciting, hearing that wonderful sutra. In my old days, when I was the arrogant teenager, and later the even more arrogant engineer, I used to think that was superstition and blind faith, and I refused. I refused that type of practice, and I got into the cult of capitalism. So I refused Buddhism and got in the cult of capitalism, getting infused, immersed, and enjoying myself so much in the in everything that this society could offer. And Canada is not very different from the U.S. in that sense. So I got into the rat race. I got into the hamster wheel, and I got very damaged and hurt. And thanks to that hurt, because of that incident, because of that accident, I got in touch with our teacher, and he really was the Bodhisattva Avalokita that I needed to pull me out of my deepest place of suffering. And even if I have intellectually refused Buddhism only in appearance, because deep down in me, that part that is beyond or above the rational engineer that I was still very attached and very faithful and very trusting or believing in the power of Avalokita. And when Thay came to rescue me, I saw him as the manifestation of the Bodhisattva Avalokita. I saw him as being the arm of the Avalokiteshvara. I saw him, and now I can see that the Bodhisattva Avalokita, or Buddha Shakyamuni, or my teacher, are only manifestation of the true Buddha, of the big Buddha, that is manifesting in all shape and form. And just like about, and this is again what we have been studying in the Lotus Sutra, that the lifespan of the Buddha is infinite, that the Buddha is manifesting in all kind of shape, in all kind of forms, whenever, however, he can help, she can help. I'm doing a very good, a very big circle in fact, I'm trying now to share with you how I see the East-West connection in practicing Buddhism. How with our intelligent, rational, I do not find a word in order to be able to describe, but you know, our American way of practicing, that we need to, and we need that things make sense to us. And when it does not make sense, or when we do not understand, that we refuse it. And I don't know if it is the case in America, but it is very much the case in Quebec and in Montreal. The devotional practice or the let's call it the devotional practice. It's not something that is very that can be easily accepted in this society. Just like I could not accept it, and I understand so much why, I have come now to realize that the intelligent, intellectual, rational practice alone does not suffice. It's not enough. It can be a way in for us. It can be something that allow us to maybe take off a first coat of that thick layer. So we start with the intelligence and the intellect, or we start with small in. And the step in that we may have found, and our teacher has been so skillful at leading us so compassionately and so lovingly, because he knew that just like the Buddha, if he was to give us the hard teaching right away, that we would not be able to take it, that we would have refused it. Just like the chemists who have tried to give the antidote to their children, or just like the Buddha announcing the highest teaching. Monks at that time, high practitioner of the Buddha, I don't recall the number, but 5,000 left the assembly when the Buddha announced the teaching. In the last talk at the retreat in Montreal, I have concluded the retreat with a sentence. Well, too many. But the one that comes to me now is the Dharma is deep and lovely. And the Dharma for me is lovely because it's deep. Now, how deep is your love? I can see my friend in the States, U.S., smiling, because that's a beautiful song that also very much love. But the Dharma is deep and lovely, and it is lovely because it's deep. And how can it get? How deep can we get? And that's always the question. I remember that in the retreats that I've led in the various Sangha, I have sometimes spoken about the parable of the ocean. And that's how I can see, or that's how I see the depth and the loveliness of the Dharma. When we are on a beach in Riviera Maya in Mexico, it can get very hot, and we are burnt, toasted under the sun. And it is so wonderful to be able to just tiptoe, because the sand, to like your tiptoe and run. And when we approach the water, we start to feel fresher. And when we our feet touch the wet sand, we feel so relieved. And we step into the water, and the water feels so cool and so nice. And we may even be tempted to just, well, not me, I am very chicken, but to just and jump into the water and get fully wet and immersed and enjoying and the wonderful feeling in all parts of our body, and swim around and get the wonderful first taste of first benefit of the that the ocean can give. My daughter Makan has been in some environmental project, and has been initiated in her work. She has to dive. So she has been diving with sharks somewhere in the coast of Africa. And when she came back, she was completely transformed. Well, first of all, she was transformed. Her looking at the people are living in Africa. And she came back telling me, you know, I understand what Thay is saying, that you do not need all of this to be happy. People can be so happy, that very happy, just sleeping on the beach with my friends, and diving in the morning, diving in the afternoon, diving in the sunset, diving in the sun, order to go and chase the sharks and to be able to identify them. And I was very happy. Her mother was less happy because, she didn't want to see her daughter being a beach bum somewhere in Africa. So Khan did come to Montreal, Canada, and is still pursuing study. But she got that insight. That's not what to speak about. I wanted more to speak about the ocean. And in her diving, she said, "It is so wonderful, and you must be there in order to be able to live and to see it." And so she was describing how wonderful the corals that she saw, and got her so passionate that she has been involved in another project that is called the Coral Reef Protection or something like that. But unless we go into those depths, how can we even imagine how beautiful it is, or how beautiful the ocean can be? And I guess that the deeper we go and the more wonderful things that we never expect or suspect, because we cannot know. So aware of the short time that we have, I want to get back to the practice of the understanding of merit. Merit, just like any concept in Buddhism, or just like any Dharma, is deep and lovely. And they are thousands of ways to practice any or each concept that is being taught to us. And because we are learning the Lotus Sutra, and because we have already did the Dhamma, we practice non-discrimination. Non-discrimination between all teachings. We are learning, and we are trying to learn how to see all teachings as teachings. And that what we learn from the Bible is not very different from what the Buddha Shakyamuni has taught. And learning the Lotus Sutra, I'm trying to learn that all vision, that all and every teaching, all and every practice are all Buddhist with the big B, teaching and practice. And it's to the notion of the one of the core teaching that we are also learning, and that we need to apply when we are learning the Lotus Sutra. We are all Buddha. That's the first key that we want to keep in our study of the Lotus Sutra. All Buddhist, all teachings are Buddhist teachings. And that's the second key. And the third key that is related to that second one is about skillful means. And skillful means talk about timeliness and appropriateness. And so depending on the land, depending on the situation, depending on the place. We may need or we can apply the same concept, the same word, the same teaching. But we need to not forget that ingredient of skillful means. Coming back to the merit, in Vietnam, like in many countries in Asia, we are practicing what my sister Lily, my sister Terry, is calling. I don't remember the word, but yeah, birds freeing or fish freeing, not frying, freeing. But in some big Buddhist festival or big food Buddhist celebration in temples in Vietnam, you will find many people offering you to buy birds from them or fish from them. And my grandmother, my mother, my ancestors must have done the same thing and taught them how to do that, but would be buying many, many of those fishes and birds and free them up. Yeah, you buy a bunch of pigeon and you open the gate and the pigeon fly out, and so you are freeing them. And same thing with fish. And they are doing it with all their faith, their devotion, their fervor, and their belief in the merit. I find it beautiful. I find it a beautiful practice. Why? Because by doing that, they're watering the seed of compassion. The seed of compassion that is looking at a caged bird and giving freedom to a bird. And that is, for me, the practice of dana. That is one way of practicing dana. And when I'm speaking about bird freeing, when I'm speaking about releasing fish back to the river, it is the gift of freedom. It is the gift of life. And it is born out of compassion. And when we do that, compassion is being watered. And what a wonderful practice it can be. But to water our compassion. And that's part of the practice of the four diligence. We practice touching the seed inside of us that we want to nourish and to encourage and to grow. And the practice is the practice of nourishing our compassion. It is the practice of Dhanaparamita. Dhanaparamita meaning the way to get from or to the other shore by the practice, with the practice of dana. With our Western eye, with our Western intelligence, we look at that and we say, it doesn't make sense. And so we that's not a practice that we would engage in, and that's not a that is appropriate to us because of our way of thinking. But I'm very careful when I say that the practice is not a practice that is appropriate for me, but I would not say that that's not a practice that can give about merit, because it can and it does. And that is how, or that is why I am also so grateful and so respectful and so in awe, AWE, to have such a great teacher as our teacher Thich Nhat Hanh Thai, because he is so skillful and he knows what it is that we that can touch and that we can use. And that is why the way that Thai is teaching merit really bear his signature and his vocation or his promise to his teacher. So his name and Nhat Hanh, single action, is to renew Buddhism and to bring Buddhism where it ought, to make it appropriate when and where it is to be applied. And that's why the concept or the practice of merit in Southeast Asia is good for the Southeast Asia culture, and it continues to be. In America, merit needs to be practiced in the American context, and it is it can be summed up in a very easy way. Before I get to divulge to you what I think that merit is according to our teachers teaching in America, because I'm sure that Thai is not teaching the same teaching in Thailand. So let's say that Thai is teaching in America, but before I divulge you that secret, I will maybe come back to the definition of that word. So merit is in Sanskrit, I don't remember, punya or something like that. Well, I find it in an Indian restaurant when I go. But merit for me is the result or the consequence of our action. And when we are speaking about action, we are speaking about the action, the bodily action, about the speech and mind. And when we are reciting the gatha, when we invite the bell, body, speech, and mind in perfect oneness, we are bringing our body, our mind, and our speech together in one place. And those are the three places, or those three actions that we are talking about when we are speaking about karma. Karma, the literal translation, is action. But when we talk about the action, we know that the action has its roots. It comes from somewhere. It doesn't come from the sky. So there are conditions that precede the action. And once the action is made, when there is a thought that manifests, when there is a bodily action that is being acted on, when there is a word that is being spoken out, we may do it in our dark room alone. We may do it in secrecy, in secret, and we hope or we think that it will be gone and nobody will know about. But according to the Buddhist teaching, it will continue on. It will continue on as our, okay, I'm using the same word again, karma. And karma are all those conditions that are there ready to manifest when conditions are right. And we are making up and we are fabricating our karma every moment in the way we act, in the way we speak, in the way we think. And that is our inheritance, and that is what is defining us. And I take this opportunity to remind you of the five contemplation, and especially of the fifth one. I'm the ground of my actions, and my action will always follow me. So what is merit? Merit is the result of our action. And this is because that is. And when we are sowing wheat, we cannot expect to harvest some other type. We can only reap what we sow. And I think that's a very Christian saying. So they agree together, the two brothers, Jesus and Buddha, agree that you reap what you sow. And so the result of our good deed can be called merit. And my Christian friend do not like that, because they say that's how my mother has trained me, and I don't like that at all. Go do your room and you'll get a candy. For me, it's perfectly okay, and that's how I also train my children. And I know that it is the same rule that is applied also in my life. And that is why we've been taught the Noble Eightfold Path. And that is why we are taught the five mindfulness trainings. And that is why we are taught and we are reciting and practicing the 14 mindfulness trainings of the Order of Interbeing. And why is it that we do that? We do that for the merit that it can bring. We know that by leading an ethical life, we will avoid ourselves lots of suffering, and we will be in touch with what this wonderful Dharma can offer, the truth of happiness. And that was my at the last retreat. Happiness is possible. And it's possible because in the context of today's talk, the happiness that we are talking about is the merit, is the fruit of our diligent practice. And so this quote, to complete the quote, happiness is possible. And there's no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. And the way of happiness is the way of the Buddhist teaching, is the way of the Buddha's teaching, is in the Eightfold Path, is in the Third Noble Truth, is in the Four Noble Truth, is in the Six Paramitas, is in the Seven Factors of Enlightenment. And all of those practices that we are doing, we do it according to the tradition of Plum Village. And the tradition of Plum Village is about practicing the present moment, in the present moment, for the present moment. We are practicing nourishing our joy every moment. Joy being the merit that comes from our practice, the merit that is nourishing our practice joy, nourishing joy, and joy becoming joy, more joy, and joy being bigger, bigger joy, all encompassing joy. And when we are practicing diligently, when we are practicing the four characteristics of Plum Village, nourishing our joy in each and every moment, we become walking joy. And everybody who sees us, who can be in touch with us, cannot but be affected, inflicted with that joy that we are radiating out. And that is the merit, according to our teacher in Plum Village tradition. And it is very, very compatible. Not only it is compatible, it is a direct application of the Lotus Sutra. And with that, I can say that I have been already a little bit over time. I thank you very much for your diligent practice and for being there. And I wish you a very happy continuation of this beautiful day. This beautiful day that started with our waking up smiling to greet 24 brand new hours. May we leave them in perfect mindfulness and look at all beings with the eyes of compassion. And you see, that is also another manifestation, another practice of the Lotus Sutra that we have been doing all this time. Thank you so much again for being there. And with that, I will ask for the sound of the bell and I will bow out. Thank you.